They were high school sweethearts that got married and had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
We've got a special Q&A show teed up for you tonight. Going to be taking... Okay. Definitely not going to be going that route on this show tonight. Going to be answering your questions.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
In some circles, all you have to do is the initial Wii U of Buddy Holly for people to know you're referencing that.
Wii U.
Yeah, and they know Wii you're referring U. to that exact piece of culture right there.
Wii U.
Yeah, that's it. They know what you're talking about.
I feel like we could run the whole song, couldn't we, at this stage?
in specifically a mention not use type way.
Right.
Yeah, you could in a memeified ironically distanced way only.
I'm going to do it.
All right.
You know,
you can drop
so
it.
So far I have been very hesitant not to do it. You know.
You could do
I've,
what you need
I've
to
I've only
do.
Been able to share this, you know, through back channels, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. All right. Let me see if I can find it.
This artist paid a high price to make this comedy. So,
all right, let's see. Here we go.
It's a video.
Wii U, I am gonna kill Joe Biden. Uh-oh, gonna shoot him with my gun. I got it from Walmart yesterday, and I found his address in Delaware.
Okay. No endorsement here.
So the video
no
really makes it.
Here.
We've, oh. He's singing this into his iPhone, like, notes app, you know, the video voice memo app. He's standing in front of a green screen, but the green screen doesn't cover all the stuff
it's
behind
really
him.
It's really shitty,
yeah. So you see parts of his wall, and it has some of the Weezer album cover on it.
Yeah.
And he is in a yellow jacket. He looks deranged.
He looks disheveled,
and
yeah.
He points to a gun, and then also includes...
Not a real gun, a picture of a gun.
A picture of a gun, and then also includes... The actual address.
Yeah, or an address of some kind.
I am gonna kill Joe Biden. Uh-oh, gonna shoot him with my gun. I got it from Walmart yesterday, and I found his address in Delaware.
I mean, he points to an address.
His address in Delaware, and it also has the longitude and latitude points on it. I think it's pulled from Redfin or Zillow, this screenshot.
Yeah, I believe this was one of those tweets that had like two retweets, one like, and 2 million views.
2 million views, yeah. The analytics were off the charts, but you couldn't do anything with it.
You just could not interact with it.
I believe he did subsequently say he got a visit from...
Yeah, I would bet. The Secret Service. Yeah, woo. I don't believe this is a conservative gentleman.
No.
I believe this is a Bernie motivated.
No, well, yeah. Yeah, it came out in the primary,
yeah,
I should say.
To put it in context, yeah.
Oh, man, it feels good to get that off the chest. I feel like I feel like I've played the drop a few times over the years, and I've certainly shared it. And, you know, I feel like this is a world premiere in some ways. No one has been willing to do it.
I certainly wasn't expecting to drop this on the cast.
I wasn't either. I was just looking at the soundboard, and I saw Wii U on it.
I certainly don't endorse anything.
No, but...
anything said on this podcast, done on this podcast, or anything said in that video, you know, disclaim.
Yes, no, it's humorous. It's a joke. You know, he's a comedian. He's an actual comedian who did the video.
He is an artist who's trying to create a particular effect, and it's very controversial and cutting edge. Yeah.
It's very cutting edge. I've never seen anything quite like it.
He's definitely right out there on the vanguard.
I must have watched this 500 times. I mean, for real.
Okay.
Wii U, I am gonna kill Joe Biden.
Okay.
Uh-oh, gonna shoot him with my gun.
Okay.
I got it from Walmart yesterday, and I found his address in Delaware.
Not okay. Not okay. It's not okay.
Oh.
It's not okay.
It is. It's great. It's, you know, this is like, you know... we live in a free country. You know what I mean? He's not in jail. He gets to have fun.
It is fucking amazing that he is not in jail or dead.
It's clearly a humorous, you know? I mean, in a weird way. I get it. But, like, you know. You know? I mean, if it was real, why would you be singing it to Weezer?
I mean, he's clearly mocking the idea of an extremist like this doing something like this, but taking that as your humor material is very much pushing the boundaries of acceptable humor.
Anyways, I was not literally was not planning that until I saw the thing.
Threw me a curveball.
We'll head into the questions now. Liz says I need to play music, so I'm gonna find some music.
Woo!
Someone in Japan logged into my Spotify, so I have to figure out how to re-log into
it. Oh, fuck. I wonder if they took all your cool playlists.
You know, I wonder what do you get from hacking someone's Spotify, you know?
Fuck.
You get some ad-free music, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do here. You want to do Twee?
Okay.
No,
fuck that. Never mind.
Not.
Forget it. What was it like,
absolutely
Dressy Bessie?
It was who's the lady who does the thing with the bangs?
Like Zooey Deschanel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She's
in
there. And similar types of people. Here, I'll read. She and him, that's her thing. Belle and Sebastian.
Okay,
Camera Obscura. The Shins. Is the Shins Twee?
I mean, I think some of these are arguable.
Yeah, some of them. The Smiths.
Feist? Like, I don't know if Feist is Twee.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a questionable list.
Yeah.
But continue. I'll find some stuff.
Which Pokemon is the most socialist?
I don't know anything about Pokemon except when I was playing youth basketball on the team in which I was the only white person. The coach would always, when we would lose, he would scream at us and say that we were too focused on our Pokemon. And that's how he would pronounce it. I remember that coach Daniel. He was just like, "You're too busy at home on your fucking Pokemon. We should be fucking practicing." It was a good bit. It was a great bit at the time. I wasn't on Pokemon, so it really didn't apply to me.
That's what I'm going to think from now on when I see Jane playing Roblox.
That's what he was
fucking
getting at.
Pokemon.
Pokemon. Should be practicing your free throws.
Get out there and fucking make something of yourself,
Coach
Jane.
Coach Daniel, man. He did all sorts of crazy shit. He would drive real recklessly with us in the van and shit like that. He had a great vision, though. It's funny. It's like, why am I on this team, right? Yeah. Is the first question. Yeah. I mean, because it was like a select team, and it was like a church team, and it was a church that I was not... it was church-related. Yeah. I don't know. They practiced in a church. I wouldn't say it was purely... But, you know, like...
Yeah.
If you're in a neighborhood, and you, like the black church... Like, the people go to the black church, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just how it works in our sort of oddly segregated religious system. So I wouldn't say it was church-related, except we did wear church uniforms from, like, the 70s.
Okay.
People were kind of embarrassed by them because they had the short shorts and all that kind of stuff.
No, I think,
like,
that's badass.
I know. Now you look at me like, that was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
but
that's
like,
pretty awesome.
But, like, at the time, everyone else was wearing...
Like the big baggy.
Yeah. And they had, like, names. You know, I remember there was one, it was called, like, the Dallas Ballas and stuff like that. And it was just, like, we didn't have that at all.
Yeah.
And it's just because they were trying to save money.
Yeah.
But they were practicing at the local rec center.
Yeah.
When my dad and I were out there just shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear to God, they just brought me on their team from that.
They just scouted you.
They were just like, bring this guy over, because they saw me playing. And I mean, obviously, it's just at the time, my size, you know.
You're unusually tall.
Yeah, like, I'm tall now for...
Yeah, you are.
But at the time, I was radically taller. Like, I, you know, I would have been like 99th percentile instead of like 90th percentile or 85th or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just... But yeah, that's how I became the only only white player on what was basically a black church basketball team. But that was a really good team. Like, they played in a like competitive, selective league, you know.
I never expected to net a guy as tall as you. You know, my dad's a small man. And like, my expectations were in the much shorter range.
Yeah.
I remain quite amazed that I broke the 6-foot barrier.
Mm.
It's quite, you know, and I'm a very small person myself, so this was necessary to try to balance out my little tiny feeble genes.
You know.
And the children are big and strapping.
I didn't even realize until, you know, after the fact that, you know, height was such a big selling point.
Ladies. Yeah, no, I think, you severely underestimated
I could have played it better.
Yeah,
you know. But, you know, you win some, you lose some.
I'm the Warren Buffett of the dating market. I spot underpriced securities. It's the autism.
I could have had more confidence, you know.
You should have, because you're a great catch. You're a great commodity, but your low self-esteem was really to my benefit here.
Mm-hmm. No, not really.
You see? No.
Okay.
I think Geodude, probably. It, just my gut, going with my gut, Geodude is the most socialist. But going with aesthetics, I'm going to say Star Me. Or maybe even Star You, man.
Yeah.
Mr. Mime sometimes has a job. Like, he's a Pokemon who works, as opposed to like a dugong or something that you never has a job.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's like dog fighting, right? Like, that's my understanding of Pokemon. Cockfighting or whatever.
Ash is like Michael Vick.
Basically, right? I mean, I know enough about it. I wouldn't say I never got into it.
Yeah, basically they're little animals and you have to fight. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because sometimes they're weirdly humanoid, like Mr. Mime and Jinx.
It's hard to make that socialistic. You know, it would be whichever of the Pokemon turned around and was like, guys, why are we fighting each other? Let's kill the trainers.
Yeah.
If there was ever a plot line of that, that's the guy.
Yeah. There are Pokemons that are hostile to, you know, being trained and caught and so on. There are, you know.
B- being caught, sure, but like, just like, what the hell are we doing here? Beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
I don't get this. What do we need these guys for? I guess because they just got us, you know, in the little balls and stuff. We just can't resist it. Those balls just, you know, like chains.
There are chains.
So.
We all live in our own Pokeballs.
Doing the best we can. It's like gladiators, you know?
Pokemon are modern day gladiators.
Yeah. Just kill to survive.
That's what any given Sunday was about.
Kill to survive. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Why is mainstream criticism of porn focused on its psychological effects on porn consumers and not the industry practices that harm the women who are being exploited?
I don't think that's an accurate premise, because remember, there's been a ton of documentaries about porn performers. Like, Rashida Jones, remember she got all torched for her thing about porn?
Yeah.
And that was all focused on,
on
the women in it, and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
What?
How Rashida Jones changed her mind about porn.
Yeah.
So she got flamed enough into being like, never mind all that.
She gave it up?
Well, yeah, or maybe they're saying she used to be pro and now is anti. I can't be bothered to I'll read this while you continue, and I'll let you know what it says.
You know, I think it's because, you know, we live in a very capitalist society, and, you know, workers... consent is this really misweighted and misconstrued thing that it, you know, gives permission to, is sort of construed to give permission to and to validate and justify a really broad range of behaviors on the part of employers that, you know, socially is really incredible, the breadth of that category. And the only way that we can argue against, you know, practices that are problematic, therefore, is to argue against them as consumer goods, to say that they're bad consumer good, that they cause problems for consumers, because, you know, in a capitalist society, we face the world as consumers, right? And as, you know, producers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people say to themselves, the performers have made the choice to be in this industry. Their reasons are their reasons. You know, it's maybe a bad job, but it's a job, et cetera, et cetera. And I think in the kind of society we live in, those kinds of arguments hold a lot of weight with people.
Yeah, I can't make heads or tails of the interview, to be honest with you.
You can't tell what Rashida Jones changed her mind about?
No.
You can't tell what the before or after was?
Honestly, I can't. Awful interview. Let's see. Since a kid is real into soccer, have y'all started following any soccer clubs? Nope. She doesn't like watch soccer either. I try to get her to watch soccer on TV, and she's just like, this is boring. I'm like, how do you think I feel watching you? No, I don't say that. But I'm not actually bored when I watch her, but watching it on TV, I'm less interested. Let's see, what else we got here? I probably should have screened some of these, though this was foisted upon me in the last second.
It sounds like Rashida Jones at one point wrote an essay saying that Hollywood was way too pornographic and that people should stop acting like whores and like doing really graphic sex scenes and stuff. But then she admitted that she used porn also. And this is being understood as her like changing her mind on porn. But like, actually, it's just...
You see what I'm saying? Doesn't make any fucking sense.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense, yeah.
So I'm like, I don't really know where to go with it. Okay.
It's just more like Rashida Jones uses porn and also has these other beliefs that are possibly also consistent with that, depending on, you know, some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Someone want, you know... I'm a high school teacher, debate coach. Next year's topic is going to be economic inequality, about whether the U.S. should increase taxes in order to create a universal basic income, make a federal jobs guarantee, or expand Social Security. Matt, what do you think about the topic? I'm sure I'll end up cutting some cards from PPP. Awful topic. First off, what do they mean by expand Social Security? Does that just mean the welfare state, like normal welfare state stuff? That's not one of the other two. If in that case, that's the clear winner. I mean, to me, that's a pretty low hanging fruit to just basically build up the normal welfare state, you know, benefits to disabled people, kids, that kind of stuff. Federal jobs guarantee, as I've said a thousand times, is just unemployment benefits with really strict activation requirements. They have this in other countries, like Work for the Dole in Australia. It's just a very, very punitive unemployment benefits regime that, for whatever reason, for about 5 years or so, though I would say not anymore, lefties kind of got spun up into thinking was some kind of revolutionary program, which is kind of crazy now looking back on it. But you don't hear a whole lot about it anymore. Basic income, you know, again, that's going to be kind of a definitional thing. I think the Alaska situation, where you build up a fund and you socialize capital share, what should you do with capital share? Pay it out to everyone equally. I think that's a great system, you know. So you want to call that UBI, and then that's a good setup as well. But I don't view that as in competition with the welfare state, right? Like, the normal welfare state is typically funded through Social Security contributions, payroll taxes, right, from labor, right? So it's kind of like the division of income between workers and non-workers. And then capital share is a whole other thing. I don't know. That seems, I don't know, I don't want to say it's a terrible topic. I guess for debate it should be fun, but I don't know. I think anyone who's going to have to defend the JG thing is going to be in a really tough spot, I think. Especially in the debate world, because I feel like in the debate world you can't hide as much as you can. The JG people were very strategic about not engaging and like trying to like, you know, basically play these sort of games in like the politics of it. I had debates lined up with some of prominent JG advocates and have them fucking back out.
Cowards.
You know? And, you know, and they wouldn't
face Matt in open combat.
There was just strategic elements of what they were doing to avoid just the basic critique that's been around forever, which is like, I don't know, dude, conditioning benefits on work activity. It's not good. In fact, we're about to have that debate all over again with food stamps and Medicaid. That's the big push that Republicans are doing as far as the debt limit brinksmanship is concerned, is more work activity requirements for receipt of those benefits. So,
that's going to be fun.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Somebody asks, any tips on potty training in the thick of it now with our 2.5-year-old? We like paid them to use the potty with candy.
Yeah, give them an M&M when they use the bathroom. Whenever they start going, you know, like accident. Well, okay, no. So first off, get rid of the diaper when they're at home.
Yeah.
Like not even the pull-up. And, you know, people don't want to, like, piss their pants. It's, like, not a good feeling. And they will piss their pants, right, at first, you know. Yeah. But that's, like, a good way to get them to be like, hey, don't, you got to go to the bathroom. Because, like, the alternative is this.
Yeah.
And I think that sucks for you as well, you know, because then you've got to change them and all that kind of stuff. But that's a better way to go. You can also have them go with nothing on.
Yeah.
Just pantsless, bottomless.
And they also don't want to pee down their leg, like, you know, or all over themselves.
But that's an easier path because it's a little bit cleaner in a way, because you're not having to. And when they get going, if you're watching them, you can move them to the thing quickly.
Yeah.
And they can get to it quickly without having to fuss with the
clothes.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Remove those frictions as much as possible. Remove the ability to go into a pull-up or whatever, and then you could give them an M&M or whatever whenever they go. praise them and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I did not find potty training difficult at all.
Yeah, we didn't struggle. The girls seemed to catch on. And they didn't want to pee their pants. So, you know, neither do I. We have that in common. In debates over the death sentence, I often concede that some people deserve to die. And then I argue that even though they deserve it, we still should not kill them for moral and practical reasons. So following the same logic, do you think some people deserve to die? In fact, in my religion, we believe all people deserve to die.
Except me. I'm the exception.
Well, you're all right. Yeah. I think, you know, the official doctrinal line there is that all human beings, you know, are worthy of death, but are redeemed through grace. So, yeah, you know, people in their lives, you know, do sins and so forth. And, you know, whether or not they deserve it, they're all gonna die. So it seems like in the end, we're just talking about whether or not we should be inflicting death on people. And that's the only question. So I think you zoom in on the correct question there.
Can we have your snoo? We're having a kid soon, can offer a competitive prize. The snoo, of course, is the most technologically advanced child bassinet, a smart bassinet that rocks them to sleep when they start crying and shit.
Yep.
We did not buy a snoo because it's insanely expensive.
We rented a snoo.
You rent the snoo. And I would say wait like at least a couple weeks after they're born.
Yeah.
Because the first couple weeks, super easy. And, you know, it's only really good for a few months, you know, to get you past a certain phase. So I just rented for like 3 months or 4 months or whatever. That's what I did. A lot cheaper that way.
Interested in Liz's thoughts on the Reformed theological tradition, figures like Calvin and Barth in particular. It seems like comparisons of Catholicism and Protestantism, at least in the U.S., tend to take non-denom, Baptist, Pentecostal forms of the latter as standard, which makes sense just given numbers, but I wonder if your theological background or interests ever included that side of things. Yes, as in early Catholic Twitter, which I don't know if you guys remember, probably some of you do, Catholics, especially on the left, spent a lot of time arguing with Reform bros. You know, we know their args well. I differ with the Reform reading of Augustine. I differ with Calvin on his reading of Augustine. I don't take away Calvinism from Augustine. And you know, ultimately I come away with the Orthodox Church's position. Despite the same reading, you know, the same texts. And so, you know, I depart from these theologians, but, you know, I certainly find them interesting. You know, they're forces to be reckoned with.
Matt, is there a philosophically defensible account of capitalist exploitation that doesn't depend on the labor theory of value or a desertist theory of what wages should be? So, you know, yeah, I mean, so like the classical way this goes is it's supposed to be sort of like, you know, we can figure out, at least abstractly, conceptually, how much output is coming from each input, from each worker, let's say, right? And then if a worker is getting less than they produce and the capitalist has taken it, then you could see it's just kind of like stealing from them. Even if it's done through processes that we don't call theft, it can still be seen as theft, right? In the sense that one person got what they didn't produce and another person did not get what they did produce. That is definitely a desertist notion. Now, of course, as I assume this listener knows, I'm not a fan of desertist theories of entitlement and distribution. I don't think it is possible to determine how much any given person has produced. And I think, in fact, when you look at it closely, you realize that
Most of our output comes from inputs that were supplied by people who died a very long time ago, especially technological and informational inputs that no one alive has any claim to. And then, of course, from there, you've got land and like natural resources, which just come to us from nature. And then, of course, you have, I wouldn't call it an input, but capital receives a big share for things that they don't really do. But I think the way to kind of round the square the circle on that is you don't need to say that the capitalist's passive income is right off the bat of the worker to still say that the capitalist's passive income, that they don't deserve it. It's not theirs. Like they don't have a claim to it that makes any sense or is based in anything like reasonable. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's one thing to, you know, it's one thing to say that someone's gain is ill-gotten. It's another thing to be able to identify who it's ill-gotten from.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think those two things have to be the same, right? So it's enough to say that the person who's clipping their dividends and interest payments or rents or whatever each month, that they are receiving something, they are receiving consumption that they didn't really contribute to in any way. But that doesn't necessarily mean you can then figure out, well, whose is it? Who did contribute it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a separate kind of thing. And to me, that's why I kind of actually like the egalitarians, even like the liberal egalitarian philosophers, is I feel like starting from a baseline of just saying, look, we're just trying to get things as equal as possible, really is almost the only way to go. Because people who are trying to run down who deserves exactly what, I feel like they're going to, that's a dead end, a complete dead end. So I don't know if that answers the question exactly. I think a capitalist can be someone who is, you can describe them as being extractive. Let's say that. You can call a capitalist extractive without necessarily having to say that they are exploitive in a literal sense where you can find the person that they took the value from, you know? So.
Yes, absolutely. A couple questions here I'm going to take as a pair. Question for Liz. As a convert to Catholicism, what do you personally make of the validity of the sacraments outside the Roman Catholic Church? Do you defer to church teaching on the efficacy of the sacraments in Protestant churches, or do you see it differently? And Liz, as a Catholic, do you consider suicide a sin? What do you think happens to people who die by their own hand? okay. Of the sacraments, some of them you can only receive through the church, like holy orders, etc., confession. You can only receive those through the church. So, I mean, there, you know, validity is sort of obvious there. Baptism is valid. Any baptism is valid. You can be baptized by anyone, and it can be valid.
Interesting.
You know, as long as they say, you know, this is small verse, and you understand the meaning of it, and
I'm going to open up a baptism shop. And undercut all the other baptizers.
Yeah, you're going to do it for cheaper. I think it traditionally, because it's a sacrament, it has no cost.
I'll have to rethink that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll charge for a deluxe experience. I'll go the other way.
Deluxe baptism experience.
Yeah.
There's definitely people who do that.
But I could do it better.
Yeah.
It's like glamping, you know.
You'll do a glamping baptism experience. Yeah, well, some people do that. There are people who like go to the River Jordan to get baptized because Jesus was baptized in the River Jordan, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh,
but like,
interesting.
It's a very different river now. You know what I mean? Like you're,
yeah, it's a Muslim river now.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that, but I mean, all that shit you talk about rivers and how they're not the same ever, you know, what is it, the bed or is it the mud? Is it the fucking water?
It's true.
All that shit you used to talk.
Is it healthy? They got keeping it clean over there?
I don't know. I'm not the one doing it. But I believe baptisms are valid across the board, you know, provided very limited
Can you baptize someone in a liquid other than water?
No, it has to be water. Holy water.
Holy water.
I think even if holy water is not available, just water.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be hard for, if you're saying anyone can do it. Well, it's like anyone could do it as long as they have access to holy water. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it even has to be holy water. yeah. Experience tells me the Eucharist is only valid through the Catholic Church. I can't elaborate more at this time. But experience has informed me of this. I do not believe suicide is necessarily a sin. No, I think people commit suicide for all sorts of reasons. And I think it's possible to imagine suicide that was a sin. You know, you imagine sort of malicious or vicious suicides, etc., or ignominious suicides of cowardice and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Think of like the Roman world where suicide was like not an atypical way to deal with a, you know, crisis. But the suicides that we typically imagine when we're talking about them today are, you know, outcomes of of mental illness. People who are suffering, right? That's typically what we're dealing with. And those, I think, you know, God is incredibly merciful, right? The world wouldn't exist if he didn't will it. All of creation would just blink out of existence, just stop.
Mm-hmm. Right?
If God didn't will that it continue. God loves creation and he's infinitely merciful. And so I have to believe he understands what it is to suffer and to have your capacity to reason impeded by suffering.
What are your thoughts on approaches by the Nordic social democracies to police and prisons? Admittedly, I got curious for your opinion on this one after you made an offhand remark on the Faroe Islands episode. I don't remember what that remark was. I am actually quite fascinated by their police and prison stuff. You know, I try to keep it very I try to keep it very focused. I don't want to get to the point where some people do, where they're like a country that they're interested in. They're just like, I love everything about this country. It's like, I like their economic institutions.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to look at the police and prison stuff as well, just because, well, I mean, they're so fucking aggressive about putting it out that you're like, well, let me take a look, see what's going on here. So this is, of course, the the prison guards at Halden Prison in Norway singing We Are the World.
Okay.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
This was a very... I don't know. I don't know if I would say this was like a viral thing, but for me, I saw it being shared a lot because it's such a... Well, I don't know. It's just bizarre, you know?
It's very strange.
Yeah, in the context of U.S., to see a bunch of prison guards singing We Are the World like this.
Matt and Liz.
Well, oh. Well. Oh, my God. Anyways, what do they do with the police and prisons that are interesting? I mean, what I'd say is this, right? So, you know, like, their police don't carry guns that much. That's kind of neat. The prisons, you know, they have much shorter sentences, and the prisons are much nicer, and they seem to be focused on, you know, quote-unquote rehabilitation, whatever. And they seem to be effective in that they have lower recidivism rates than elsewhere in the world. There is, in the U.S. right now... something called the Scandinavian Prison Project. It was put on hold because of COVID, but I think they're doing it now. Basically, they're running a part of a Pennsylvania prison according to Scandinavian principles, whatever that might mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We'll see what comes of that.
Fascinating.
But yeah, you know. I'll say this, though. If you read the news there, like some newspapers and stuff, like... It's still the case you'll have an occasional person who is just like, they're like, I don't know, this guy just cannot get it together.
Yeah.
He goes to jail, he goes to prison, he's there for a little while, comes out,
and he just can't help himself.
Just and I would say,
I would say this is disproportionately in the context of like sexual menaces. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So make of that what you will. I don't know. There may be some people who are not reachable.
Burl Cain told me that. Burl Cain told me that the only person he'd put to death is a sexual predator. He said you can't do nothing with them.
You know, there.
That's what he said.
It's a difficult thing. I mean, if you read the press at least, and you're like, yeah, I don't know. What do you do with this guy who keeps doing this? You know, because they don't want to be like, well, I just lock him up forever, I guess. But like, you know,
I guess
like,
that's what you got to do. You let him out. Keep violating people's.
Keeps fucking doing it.
Right? Yeah. And then you can't let that happen.
So, but you know. Overall, they have much less imprisonment, much less crime, much less gun. Like, their public safety and all that shit is just night and day different from the U.S. And I don't think police and prisons are, like, the main reason for that, right? The main reason would be the egalitarianism and yeah. That kind of stuff, I would say. And maybe climate and whatever, right?
Yeah.
There are other aspects of it, perhaps. But, you know. It seems like it's at least compatible. You could have a society with a much softer policing and prison approach, and it's fine. Like, it doesn't unravel or anything. Whether you could do that without all the other parts of the Nordic package, I don't know. But I guess that's what we're going to see in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Yeah.
The Halton prison is notorious notorious for being just wildly plush. Like, the kind of stuff that the inmates are able to do there is just really kind of extravagant, you know? Like,
yeah.
They have that's part of what they're showcasing here is that they have a full blown recording studio in the prison. And if you want to and you're a prisoner there, you can just like record an album and stuff.
Yeah, I don't even have that at my work.
So.
Matt and Liz, do you own/use any useful gizmos or gadgets around the house? Yes, I have a little thingamajig called a hand broom, which is a little tiny broom the size of your hand, and it's so useful to sweep off surfaces before you wipe them down so that you're not getting, like, you don't have to do the crumb step in the same step as the, like, actually cleaning grime step. You can just skip right to the grime step and then, you know, sweep your stuff into a pile and deal with that actually in like a broom-like fashion. That makes sense. I love that thing.
Yeah, shit. I don't know that I have anything like that. Can you think of anything?
No, you're pretty minimalist.
Little devices and stuff.
No, yeah, you're not a gadgety. You're not a Mr. Gadget. Dr. Gadget, investigator.
Yeah, I mean,
Inspector,
I guess with the
Gadget.
Phone, you know, with apps and stuff, you can kind of do whatever.
Anything you two have ever felt competitive in. Areas where your partner makes you feel insecure or inadequate. Matt's a lot smarter than me.
I wouldn't say that.
But, you know, he has to not say that. It's a little sad, but it is what it is. Matt's a lot smarter than most people.
In math, I'm better at math than you are, but...
Shapes.
Shapes, yeah. Shape I could probably rotations. Do geometry better.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Or, like, if there were, like, 2 points on a board and, like, the lines started emerging from them and some one of us had to identify where they were going to converge, you could do that a lot better than me. I'd be like, I don't know. They could converge anywhere. It's none of my business. I'm not... Who knows?
Have your children ever asked you anything philosophical or theological that just stumped you? I'm doing this question only because I want to recount two things that Jane said to me in the car a couple of days ago, which are not exactly in line with this question. But the first one, which I guess maybe has some slightly, you know, philosophical content to it, is she said, and this is how she said it, why do humans keep making more stuff?
Okay, good question.
You know, she's like, it seems like we've got enough. What do we keep... doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So, of course, I told her, it's because your mom keeps buying it.
Ah!
Yeah. Yeah. Got her? And she was like, good one, Dad. No, but yeah. Then it just said, well, some things you have to keep making over and over again. Like, you got to keep making food because we just got to keep eating it.
Yeah.
You know?
But other things, you know, I don't know. People just want more shit on it. I don't know, you know?
Yep. What can you say?
But, you know, a lot of stuff we just got to keep reproducing. You know, buildings fall apart. Like, nothing lasts forever. So you do have to keep making. But I wouldn't say that's really a full answer. And then she also asked me, what do firefighters do when they are waiting for a call?
Okay, good
and
question.
To clarify, she said, you know, like, policemen eat donuts while they're waiting for a call.
LMAO, also
what
true.
What do firefighters do?
Yeah.
So
she's right about that. She's got the right idea from somewhere.
Where she got this policeman donut joke. But she was not joking. She was just like, oh, yeah, that's what they do. Well, they're waiting
they sit
to
around
hear,
and eat donuts.
Hear when the crime is going. They're just, they just eat donuts. So
this is true. Yeah.
Little things that pass through her mind that she sends back up to me. But mostly these days, she just wants me to ask her math questions. When we get going, and I'm like, let's have a little chat, you know? Like, if we're getting, she's getting a little bored or antsy or her sister's taking a while and I need to fill up some space. And I try to have some kind of conversation with her. It usually ends in, I want a hard math problem. Give me a hard math problem. So she's remarkably good at them.
She is good at them.
And she can explain to you like her reasoning for how she gets there. Like today she wanted hard addition problems.
Yeah, she was asking me for addition problems upstairs.
She's been doing multiplication a lot. And then I feel like she's kind of just moved on from that. Now she wants like 2 and 3 digit addition problems.
Yeah.
And she'll tell you like how she does them, which is very interesting. Like she, you know, she'd be like, well, you know, okay, so if it's 35 plus like 33, well, so what we're going to do here is we're going to, with the 3 and the 3, that's going to get us 60, right? I do like 30 plus 30, and then when I take the 5 and the 3, and that gets us 8, and, you know, like basic shit, but I'm certain they've not taught this in her class.
Yeah.
And I don't remember teaching her this, so I don't know. She's picked this up somehow.
She's developed it. Any advice or tips for talking to people you disagree with and attempting to change their mind? Yeah, don't use your best argument.
Mm.
That's key. Don't use your buzzsaw that just fucking owns everyone into silence and crushes them. That's never going to work. People won't change their minds. They'll get mad and double down. They'll change their minds, but not while you're around or...
They won't at all. Yeah. The persuasion stuff's really depressing, actually.
You just have to use your gentlest argument and handle them in a way that allows them to still have a decent image of themselves while believing what you need them to believe.
Yeah, you know, people use this phrase on Twitter a lot, and it's kind of obnoxious, the people who use it, but I'm just, you know, I'm going to allow that to slide by me here and say, you know, this concept of a permission structure.
Yeah.
You know, that when I read the people who are supposed to be like experts on persuasion, not like bullshit gurus, but, you know, like, I don't know, professors and stuff who run experiments and whatever.
Yeah.
That's what almost pops out, though they don't use that word, is it's not so much that you're trying to convince someone that they are, that, you know, you are right and they are wrong. It's that you're trying to find a permission structure, some pathway that gives them the permission to move their position from where it is now to where you want it to be.
Yeah.
And like, that's just a kind of a different thing, really, than like persuading them it's wrong. Because if you just come at hard, that doesn't really give them the permission to change. Like, it's almost like you wanna give them a reason for moving to your position that doesn't require them to renounce anything that they thought before. So it's almost better, even that's when you're saying not to give a strong argument, but to give, I would almost even say, like, an orthogonal argument, an indirect argument, an argument that doesn't really intersect with anything else people are saying, because then they can kind of feel like, oh, I've moved over for some other thing. It's not that I was wrong. It's just a completely other thing. And then, of course, you mix that with, like, social pressure and, you know, like, being friends, like if like friends all eventually converge to believing the same things, which is,
you know, kind of mysterious,
yeah,
suspicious in the realm of are humans doing reasoning or are they doing something else? But like, it seems that to me, you put those two together, it's like friendliness and then a permission structure that lets you walk on over to the path as opposed to like just convincing someone that they're wrong, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely key.
But I don't do those things.
Yeah, Matt's like, I know all this. I just have no interest in dealing with it.
That's such a depressing... I think it's true, and I have to accept it because, you know...
But there are certain people who you can just argue with and you can change their mind by being right. Like, you have a rapport going with Iglesias and shit where you can actually argue.
I think points. I have influenced Iglesias on a number of points. I think, you know, weirdly, some of the welfare state stuff that I do, the big stuff that I do, even on the socialism, because I do come at it from a slightly different angle than a lot of the debates. And so I do think that actually helps a little bit. But,
yeah.
But I actually just think my arg's just good, you know?
The arg's are strong.
Like the arg on the welfare state about, you know, it being a way to get money to people who aren't currently working is not new, but it was definitely not in the discourse.
No.
You know, like it was a whole other thing, you know, and people would even have these big epic debates about the welfare state and is it actually propping up capitalism through a class compromise and all that kind of shit. And I feel like being able to come in and be like, no, dude, like you're missing the point. It's just like for like literally people who are disabled and shit. And you know, it's not a class. I mean, they weren't going to work anyways or they're too old to work or too young or whatever. Once you got that, I do feel like that actually ended up slotting into that kind of approach, which is like not a direct attack on someone's argument. It's like, oh, it's a different thing that we're doing here. But yeah, I mean, in my position, I feel like, you know, if I wanted to save face on why I keep arguing the way I argue, mm-hmm. is, you know, when you have a big audience, it's a slightly different thing because it's an interpersonal persuasion is a different thing from being able to like just get your ideas out to lots of mm-hmm. people, you know? Like, so if I go and first off, any high level person that I argue with, and I only really try to argue with higher level people these days, just mm-hmm. because like, what's the fucking point to argue some random person? They're not going to change their views no matter what. No amount of anything, because they're it's so important to what they do, right?
Yeah.
So for the only thing you can do is just demolish them and then do that in front of hundreds of thousands of people who read your stuff and then hope that by kind of giving them the ammo they need, they can go out and spread the word, you know, or become convinced or whatever, you know. So I think at that level, that's probably a better way to proceed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's just me rationalizing.
Any thoughts on the universalism debate in Christian theology? Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's an interesting one. You know, Jesus Christ preached the most on hell and damnation and so on and so forth. And so, you know, reckoning with that is important. But I've been convinced... you know, favorably on the non-permanence, et cetera, of a lot of that. And also, you know, just on some of the nature grace args that have been made. So, you know, I'm sympathetic to the von Balthasarian approach to universalism myself.
Ditto.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone else asks, I've seen that American evangelicals are generally kind of iffy on the Trinity and Jesus' position theologically. I've heard Catholics suggest that the Trinity is an integral part of what it means to be Christian. What are your thoughts on this? Yeah, you definitely need to be a Trinitarian. The more, especially I get into prayer, the more the Trinity emerges as an extremely important aspect of Christianity and the relationship between the persons of the Trinity as an important aspect of Christian spirituality. The relationship between the persons of the Trinity and the way that that community exists, that triune God, tells us so much about the Christian life. That's the kind of, you know, being we in the end are trying to emulate in our own perfection. And it really helps understand one's own inner life and creativity and so on and so forth. It's immensely important. Immensely important. Yeah. Absolutely.
As parents with your own complicated relationship with social technology, what are your thoughts, future wishes, and current praxis around screen time, phone use / ownership, social media participation for your kids? My daughter's 7 months right now, and while I'd like to go hard Luddite and wall her off from what I see as a pretty toxic online world, I know that won't be possible when she's old enough to engage with it. I'd love to hear both of your perspectives on this. I mean, you know, our oldest is almost 7. She doesn't have any social media. Doesn't have, I mean, she has connection to the internet in the sense that some of, like, her apps will use the internet if she wants to watch, like, Disney or, you know, like a kid's show or play some of the games on the tablet and whatever, but not like a browser or anything like to go to websites or whatever. The screen time thing is an interesting thing because that seems like a really big discourse that I don't know, but I just totally checked out from. I don't know if you have thoughts on quote-unquote screen time. Everyone seems to be very convinced that, like, it's, like, not just that it's bad, but that it's bad and, like the magnitude of it is huge. You know what I mean? Because it's one thing to be like, you know, watching something, engaging with screens for more than an hour a day is worse than not. But it's a second thing to say it's way worse than not.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I mean, 10%, like, you're knocking points off the IQ like you wouldn't believe. And frankly, I don't know, I've kind of looked around for this, and I just don't, I don't know what people are basing this on.
Yeah.
And I mean, screens are also not new. I watched TV my whole life.
I watched a lot of TV as a kid.
Like, what else were you doing? I was poor, so I didn't have anything to do but watch TV, play video games. You know, when I had it, I was too poor for even that. For the most part, once that shit broke, I couldn't get it replaced. So what was I doing? And then I was on my computer learning Linux and stuff. So I don't know.
Damn.
I wouldn't say we don't have any, like, rules on screen time or tracking screen time or whatever.
No.
But
we have rules on time generally. I mean, we manage the time.
Yes. But, no, yeah. Things are structured. You know, the kids wake up and, you know, they watch some Bluey usually. Bluey's the big one. They'll watch some Bluey as, like, we're getting ready for school, and then they'll go to school and they do that all day. And then when they come home, I go and do stuff with them. You know, typically, and that's usually outside the house, so I guess it doesn't involve screens per se. And then when we get home in the evening, watch some TV, eat some dinner, go up, and then you have tablet. But they don't usually want the tablet just during the day. It's almost like a way to entice them to spend a little bit of time in the room at the end of the day before, as they wind down for bed, is to be like, you can have the tablet now. But I don't know. I don't know. What would you say the total amount of screen time they have is?
It's not that much.
And
really,
how do you track it, really? Yeah. Like, does it count if the TV's on and they're just kind of putzing around, you know, downstairs, coming into the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, they're really, like, playing with us mainly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess some people have problems where the kids just, like, they don't want to do anything but be on the tablet.
Our kids are not that emotionally wed to the screens.
No, they're happy to go do whatever. In fact, they frequently will say they're bored. I would say, I guess what the only deviation we've had from that slightly, briefly, was when Jane got Roblox on the tablet. And she was real into that for a while. And I would say, like, she still enjoys the game, but that was the only time I've ever seen what I guess maybe people are generally experiencing and scared of.
Yeah.
Right? Which was just like, oh my God, this seems to really...
She got into it.
Have a hold on this person. But she broke it, like, with one thing where I just took it for a couple days and then it's never recurred. So,
yeah.
You know.
Is a cinnamon roll something that necessarily takes a long time or a lot of skill? No, you can make cinnamon rolls for sure. You can definitely make cinnamon rolls. You can do it. I made cinnamon rolls for the first time when I was like 13. It's totally doable.
Look, you can learn how to do anything on YouTube. Anything that's practical in the world of like just handicrafts and whatnot, I'm telling you, go onto YouTube and there'll be someone who'll show you how to do it. Anything. Anything. I mean, you know, that's just, anytime I want to learn how to do something that I've not done before, like, I went into the garage, right? And we had this, like, molding drywall or whatever. And I just took it all off, replaced it. I never did anything like that. I couldn't tell you what any of this shit was. You got to worry about the electricity. I wouldn't say it's, like, an especially difficult project at the end of the day, but it would have seemed like a crazy project to me.
Yeah.
But you can just go online and someone will show you, oh, here's how you pull all the shit off the wall, and here's how you just will nail the shit back up. You know? Oh, you need to cut the pieces? You cut it like this. You know?
Yeah.
Baking a cinnamon roll is not as hard as...
No, there's no way.
Rewalling, if that's even the right word.
I can guarantee you that. Liz, what do you like about Dostoevsky? I read Crime and Punishment and didn't really find it that deep. That's, you know, it's the reaction people have to Crime and Punishment. You know, I would give the Brothers Karamazov a chance. What I like about Dostoevsky is that he almost seems to like people better because they're fallen. He is very aware of fallenness, and he's an author who's very focused on it as a theme. This is maybe clearer in Brothers Karamazov. But it doesn't seem to impair his capacity to be... you know, merciful with his characters and to you know, show them a great deal of grace and how he reveals them and characterizes their inner lives. And as a writer, this is something that I quite strongly aspire to. So, you know, the idea that God loves fallen people more because they need it more, and therefore that there's a sort of a harsh beauty to fallenness, I like about Dostoevsky. Yeah.
Trade policy under socialism. Nordics have pretty open trade rules, but the American left has mixed feelings. Would love to hear your thoughts. So the Nordic countries are small countries, as people point out. Oftentimes people will somehow derive from this that what they do is real easy because they're small. And we can't do it because they're big. I've always said it's the opposite. That being small makes it a lot harder. And this is, in fact, one of the ways that being small makes it harder. If you're small, you can't produce what you need, like everything that you need in the country, or even come close to it. The U.S. can't produce everything it needs in the country, probably, you know, because there's certain materials and resources that we do need to import. But it has the ability to produce a lot more of the stuff internally. Like, I think... trade as a percent of GDP in the U.S. is like 11%, 12%, something like that.
Yeah.
And if we really wanted to, we could probably push that down even further, right? It's just a big fucking country. We got food. We got oil and gas. We got everything, you know? I think one of the big ones that we struggle with is like rare earth minerals. But I think we have rare earth minerals. It's just not as easy to access.
Yeah.
As other places, like, we've got all the natural resources. We, you know, it's just, it's so massive that we could manage most of it internally. And that means that our sensitivity to global markets is much less. Whereas if you're a little 5 million country in a frozen hellscape, you're going to have to import a lot, which also means you're going to have to export a lot, right? If you want to have like developed country standard of living. You know, Finland is not going to be able to produce everything that it needs up there in that little frozen, you know, tundra of the north. It's got to import a lot of stuff, which means it's got to export a lot of stuff, which means that open trade, especially trade that is not very, you know, heavily tariffed and and you know, making sure they don't get undercut by industrial policies in other countries and whatever. Like, that's a big concern that they have, just to kind of stay afloat. The U.S. is just not really in that same boat. So I think that's going to explain why you get these different attitudes towards them. As far as under socialism, you know, and this goes towards everything, right? Like, to me, socialism is best understood on an institutional level, right? A socialist company is one that is, you know, organized as a worker co-op or a state-owned or something like that. A socialist country is a more nebulous concept that's a little harder to pin down. Of course, when we had the old kind of like Soviet style, whatever, you know, the Eastern Bloc and Cuba and whatever, they all traded. They all had trade, and they would even trade not just with one another within their socialist bloc, but they would trade with the other bloc as well. So, you know, I think you're always going to have, unless you can produce everything internally, you're always going to need to trade abroad. And so that's going to be true under socialism just as much as it's true under capitalism. So,
my girlfriend just got Invisalign and is really struggling with feeling embarrassed by people noticing it. Any tips from Liz? Yeah, tell her they can either make you feel bad about having fucked up teeth, or they can make you feel bad about trying to fix it, but they can't do both. They got to pick one. So fuck that. No feeling bad about trying to improve yourself. It's the American way.
Yeah, that's all. You know, just tell them that you're on the hustle grind set, you know?
Yeah, be like, look, you have a problem with me having fucked up teeth. I'm trying to do something about
it.
I'm
looks maxing.
Yeah.
Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard about all the maxings.
Looks maxing. I saw that the other day and I was like, are you serious? We have a word for just making yourself look better?
For being good looking and trying to maximize the degree to which you're.
There's a website here, looksmaxing.com. No, I was watching something, and it was like it was this podcast for whatever reason, and there was like a lady and a guy, and I don't know what the politics of it was, but they were reading some question that was like, what would your advice be to young men? I think it was kind of like a red pill, like at least, you know, flirting with that kind of like men's, you know, that kind of shit. And the guy's like, I always tell the young men, looks maxing. You know, there's so much evidence that shows, you know, if you look good, you know, things go better. And
yeah.
I was just like, it's interesting. It's an interesting perspective, you know.
Yeah. What a novel thought.
It's like, so I always tell them, I'm like, dress better, man. Yeah. Comb your hair, fam.
Yeah. Don't look like shit so much. Like, what?
Is that really what they've come to you for? Yeah. Were you going to tell them to like lose some weight and, you know, get a stylish hairdo?
I mean, honestly.
Of the things you could tell them, I'm glad you tell them that, I guess. You know,
yeah,
but I don't know
say,
you're going to maintain your audience that
of
way.
Of all the messages they could be getting from some kind of red pill schema, getting the message that they should just kind of take, you know, care of themselves and be well-groomed is not the worst. Will there be a meltdown May this year? Will we be able to tell? Yeah, there's always a meltdown May. For sure.
All right, well, there you have it. Let's see. Who gets recognized in public more, Matt or Liz? Do you get recognized in public? We don't go out that much. I guess I do go out quite a bit with the kids, but I don't really get noticed. I got noticed at a pool once. And I got noticed in Grand Central Station once. Those are the only two I can remember, I think.
I've gotten noticed giving my credit card to people.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a cheat, though. If someone can just read your name and be like, oh.
That happened more when I was at the New York Times.
Yeah.
Now I'm washed up.
I don't have a lot of pictures out there, so.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like if you follow me on social media, you get pictures. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be hard. So maybe it's remarkable that two people even picked up on it.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe if you were in different circles, like if you were in kind of like scenes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if you were in a scene where more people, you know, like I assume there's some kind of lefty scene mm-hmm. in New York City or whatever. And maybe mm-hmm. if you kind of navigated those spaces and went to those bars or something, like whatever that amounts to. But we're not that. We are more, you know, we're just generic people living in generic places.
Yeah.
Seamless.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for someone trying to find a life partner in their mid-20s?
Well, looks max.
Looks max, number one.
Number one.
Start with the BBL.
No, we were just watching an expose on BBLs. So many people have died in pursuit of the perfect ass.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah, no. Well, I feel like it was a bit of a bait and switch because they were saying, oh, it's going to be about BBLs are bad. But actually, it was about all these non-BBL things, you know?
Yeah.
Like other shit that people inject in their ass.
Yeah.
BBLs come out as like the only legit thing at the end of it is like, yeah. Look, unless they're sucking fat out of you and injecting it back in your butt, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want to let them inject antifreeze in there or whatever.
Yeah, the lady they followed, well, so many of the people on there were like, I don't even know what it was.
Yeah, they're like, I have no idea what it was.
I don't know, but like, my butt's falling off now. It's kind of narrowly comical.
It's really sad, but yeah, there's a comical element to it.
Yeah, no, the lady they were following in it was, she was going to... You know, I don't know. I maybe in a way it proved the point that we just need more protection for people because she was just pathological. You know, she was just kind of like, I know I'm vain. I know whatever, but she got some random injections and they're causing all sorts of problems and infections and whatever. And she's trying to get them taken out and she decides to go get them taken out in Colombia instead of America because the American doctor wanted to take out all of it or like as much of it as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And the Colombian one, she's like, they're a little bit more sensitive to the final results. So, you know, they might only take out like 40% of it in order to, you know, because beyond that point, it would just make my butt look deformed, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay. So you still just messed up. You just messed up in the head right there. You wanted to die over this shit. But no, I mean, what would you... you know, it's so hard to answer questions like this because our situation was so unusual and so impossible to replicate, right?
Yeah.
So it's like... That's why people ask because they're like, oh, you got married in your 20s and you had kids in your 20s and that's unusual for people of your, you know, educational background and whatever. And these days, people this young, you know, and all that, right? And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's the advice? Well, the advice you meet in high school, like that's not advice, you know. One, you're already in your 20s. So, yeah, I really don't know how if you were someone because we talk about this a lot. Actually, if you were someone who wanted to get going early, can you even do it? Right? Because you can't do it unilaterally. You have to find someone else who's willing to do it with you. And I'm not sure that that's easy to do. You know, there's an element of this that it's a cultural thing. And if the culture shifts to the belief that, like, you should wait till you're 30 or whatever, then... If you dissent from that view, it doesn't really matter unless you can also find some other dissenting person, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's hard.
Yeah.
And how do you put out feelers for that, right? Like if you just try to date normally, you might have to go on 50 dates before you find someone, but that you wouldn't ask that up front either. You know what I mean? Like there are informational frictions to actually finding someone who is also of the minority view that, you know, you should go ahead and get married in your early 20s and have kids or whatever.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and that's unfortunate. But yeah. I don't really have any tips or tricks around it. I mean, I guess, and this is not useful in practice, but obviously some communities, especially religious communities, are more prone to that kind of thing than others, right? It's almost like, well, if you want, just become a Mormon and go to
Brigham Young, right? Like, if you're real serious about it, that seems to be like a good bet. But that's a little bit too drastic, obviously.
Yeah, but you know, hang around, you know, Catholics.
A certain kind, though, right? Yeah. I'd imagine most Catholics who are highly educated and young and whatever and growing, they also, you know, event similar patterns as the population as a whole, right? So,
yeah, true.
So it would be, yeah, you'd have to find some kind of ideological niche which you may or may not be interested in. You
it's
know,
true.
I think it's unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate.
I don't think it's as hopeless as it sounds. What about the apps? The kids have the apps these days.
Dude, I read more and more about these apps, and it just seems like a bit of a wasteland.
But what do you mean? I mean, the people are on the apps. It's only a wasteland if the people are a wasteland, no?
Well, you know, people on the apps, are they interested in this? And how would you know? And it's a lot of getting jerked around, you know, sending out 50 DMs, you know, if you get any matches, 10 of them respond, maybe 2 of them want to set something up, and then 1 of them just fucking doesn't show up when you set it up. It's just fucking brutal.
Wow.
That's what I'm hearing out there in the streets.
That's what you're picking up. That's terrible. Sound off in the comments if this is true.
I'm sure it depends on who you are. Well, and then you just have the, you know, this effect on the apps where, you know, most of the men don't get swipes, and the women get swipes a lot more easily, but are also often chasing the same group of people on the app. You know?
You're making the experience of modern dating sound very degrading, even for men.
Yeah. No, yeah, I would say for both.
Yeah, wow.
Now, you could, you know, maybe code up a ChatGPT situation and have it run through the dating apps for you. Have all the conversations and stuff.
And then you never have to talk to your GF.
Yeah, you just come in at the end.
Robot handles it for you.
You just come in at the end. I don't know. Yeah. I couldn't do that. I'm not at that
level.
It'd
be a funny Cyrano de Bergerac story, you know?
I'm not at that level of programming prowess, but I'm sure there are people who can. Anyways, what else we got here? Oh, someone said about moving in with a partner.
Yeah, what should you be prepared for?
That was a good one. What are the main initial challenges of living with a partner? What should we be most prepared for / mindful of? What do you think?
I don't know. I had a shitty roommate in college, but I also had a really good one. So
I think he's talking about like a romantic, like a, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend.
But I mean,
wife.
You're really easy to live with.
Mm.
Matt would probably tell you, you know, be prepared because they might be messy.
Liz is messy. That's true.
I'm the messy one.
Jane is messy too. Claire's less so.
Claire's a lot less messy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I would say, yeah.
I find Matt
differential propensity to do chores, right? Because that's basically what you're now having to deal with is... Whereas previously, if you lived alone, especially, the chores were all you.
Yeah.
And you made all the messes and you cleaned all the messes up. There was no other way to do it. And now you're in a situation where, you know, that's no longer the case. So managing that can be difficult, especially if you have different ways. But at the same time, I would say we are actually quite different on the way that we sort of would like individually approach tidiness and cleanliness and, you know, just whatever.
Well,
just
not cleanliness. Not,
well, you know what I mean? Just like,
jeez.
You know what I mean?
I
stuff like that.
I gravitate towards clutter.
But also, it's not a big deal. You know what I mean? It's not like we have fights about it. I don't think we've ever fought about it.
No.
So it's just like, okay, you know,
this the room's a little, you know, there's like clothes on the floor a little bit. I wouldn't do that, but this is what it is.
You know, sometimes it's like that. You're like the bitch you live like this meme.
Sometimes it looks like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, at the same time, what's
that's so ridiculous?
The level of importance is low. It's a low importance thing. Other than that, right? It's chores and finances, I guess, if you're going to do that with your partner. I mean, yeah. You know, I don't know what level you're involved in with this person.
Yeah.
But that's really it. Chores and finances.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the only things I think you need to be really actively concerned about.
Yeah, and I guess you need to gauge
alone time, I suppose. Yeah, you know, sometimes you need alone time, and you need somebody who can understand that.
Yeah, again, I don't know. We've never really struggled with that, I don't think.
No.
I guess it's a question like you can control, maybe you can or can't, depend on your sense of free will or whatever, but you could decide to not make it a big deal if the other person is, you know, I don't know, falling short, quote unquote, you know, based on your perspective. Obviously, yeah. They have a different perspective, so it's not really like in some cosmic sense falling short. I guess the thing you have to worry about is how much does the other person, how chill are they? Because if they're not chill about you falling short or, you know, or wherever the clashes are, then that's something you're going to have to, you know, either work on, either increasing the chillness or making sure that you're, you know, hitting your marks, and you know,
yeah,
that people are satisfied with it, I guess.
Well, speaking of, the people are going to have to be satisfied with this.
All right. Yeah, it's bedtime.
It's bedtime. We love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nighty night.
Yeah. Let me get old Rick here.
Adios, mofo.
We're capitalist, and that's just the way it is.
Okay.